March the 1st.
Okay, good morning. We are, I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Committee on Children, Families, Finance, and Policy. Welcome to all. We have reached the point where we're going to be considering and voting on the committee's budget bill for the session, which will wrap up our regular business for the session. I've been so grateful to everybody for your work and for the attentiveness of folks on the committee and staff and members of the public, those of you in the room and those of you watching online. Let me think. The agenda notes of approval of minutes, but actually they are not quite ready today. That was just yesterday, and there were a lot of folks who provided testimony for us. So that's something that we'll address at a later date along with the minutes for this meeting as well. I think with that I'm ready to go up. But let me just verify this. Yeah, I'm going to go up front and take along. Oh, actually, good point. Let's take the roll. Yeah. Today's the day where we do have pretty much everybody here. So, Ms. Kahn, if you can please take the roll.
Chair Pinto.
Present.
Vice Chair Keeler.
Present.
Lee Daniels.
Present.
Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Coulter.
Present.
Representative Davis.
Present.
Representative Hansen. Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
Present.
Representative Hicks?
Present.
Representative Hudson?
Present.
Representative Katizawatun?
Present.
Representative Lee?
Present.
Representative Nelson?
Present.
Representative Perez Vega?
Present.
Representative Zalesnikar?
Present.
We have a quorum.
We do have a quorum. I know Representative Hansen, I think, is running just a little bit late, so she'll be with us very shortly. I'm going to head up front, and I'm going to make a motion regarding the bill and a couple other motions, too, and we'll take things from there. And Madam Chair, I do have a motion when you're ready.
Go ahead, Chair Pinto.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair and members, I move that House File 238 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and that I do have an author's amendment as well.
Do you want to go ahead and offer the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, so I'm moving the A1 amendment, and I will just take a minute to walk through that for members. Actually, you know what might make sense is maybe to have Ms. Beckel and Mr. Berg first talk about the fiscal changes in the amendment, and then I can talk about the policy changes that aren't addressed there, if that's okay. Ms. Beckel.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. I will start with the early education changes in the author's A1 amendment to House File 238 DE1. First, there were changes to the early learning scholarships increase. So these appropriations changed from in fiscal year 24 and 25 appropriating, Madam Chair and members, I forgot to pull up the old spreadsheet first before I began speaking.
That's okay.
I apologize.
That's all right. It's 8:30 in the morning. It's the end of session. I think we're all probably in that same space. Mr. Berg, do you have anything that you can add? Or do you want to wait?
I can go, Madam Chair. Yes. I will just identify changes relative. Members should have this spreadsheet in their packet. It is the Children and Families House File 238 DE as amended by the author's amendment. It's dated 4:57 p.m. in the lower right corner. I will refer to the changes by line number. So the first change in the author's amendment is on line 129 in the additional funding for licensing activities line. the tails have been restored on that item. For reference, the next biennium will be covered in Representative Noor's bill. Going to line 135 and 136 in that same initiative, The receivership funding item is also going to Representative Noor's bill, and then the administrative FFP number was adjusted. At the bottom of page 5 and going on to page 6, the House File 2008, the Homeless Youth Pilot Project, if you look on page 6, you'll see that that is now a one-time appropriation. On line 187, the budget activity was changed to be the correct one. On line 189 on House File 2106, that is now a one-time change, and so the rulemaking, the small rulemaking cost that was in there is no longer included. But the bill, the language is in here to be clear. The hashtags indicate we're doing it. It just doesn't have a fiscal component at this point. On line 193, the parent aware funding is now a one-time item on line 195. On page 7 for House File 1698, the Family Friend and Neighbor Grants, that is now a one-time item. Moving on to page 12 on line 299. This is the governor's recommendation for additional funding for existing tribes in the American Indian Child Welfare Initiative. The base number was off by $9,000, and that's been adjusted to the correct amount. On page 14, line 331, and the SNAP outreach assistance has been restored at $1 million a year for just the 24-25 biennium. The governor had a higher number for that. On the bottom of page 14 on line 346, the support after foster care, stay in community, that has now been adjusted to be a one-time item. On page 15, line 360, the governor's item to support after foster care grants to counties to reduce caseloads. Both the grant on line 362 has been adjusted to be $2 million a year, and then there it is a one-time item. On the bottom of page 16 is the additional funding for contracted employment and income verification service. That's been put back in at the governor's recommendation of $1 million a year on line 393. And on the bottom of page 19 and line 456, and actually the changes on line 458 and on to the next page, that community resource centers are now a one-time appropriation. And on page 22, the Safe Harbor Navigators on line 532 are now a one-time appropriation. And I believe, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, those are the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Chair Pinto?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, members, most of that explained a number of the things in the amendment. I should say that, in addition, there were some items that had been mistakenly left out originally. So there's House File 177 from Representative Hansen had some provisions. That was a piece. There was I think it was 1198 as well, Representative Hansen, some mental health pieces relating to within the area of our jurisdiction, some technical cleanup items, but I think that in general that what Mr. Berg went through reflects the HHS side of the world, and then Ms. Becko may be ready to share on the education side.
Go ahead, Ms. Becko.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Solvay Beckel, House Fiscal. So the early learning scholarships increase was reduced by about $1.6 million in the first biennium and by about $1.4 million in the second biennium. Then the executive function curriculum grant on line 21 was added at $300,000 in fiscal year 24. On line 28, the kindergarten readiness assessment was added in at 2.5 and 3.5 million per biennium, respectively. The kindergarten entrance assessment was not reduced on line 27. Line 30, Metro Deaf School, is appropriated $200,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25. And line 37, the targeted pre-K VPK program was given administrative dollars as well, and that, those are the changes.
Thank you. Good. Chair Pinto?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, members, I think, and Madam Chair, I think that that should pretty well cover it. I'm happy to answer if there are other questions regarding the amendment, but otherwise I think we're probably ready for discussion and vote.
Did you want to go over any of the DE amendment?
Let me think. Go over the, pardon me, Madam Chair?
Did you want to go over the amendment?
Yeah, so I think that most of it, we can certainly sort of flip through. I think that most of it is reflected in what Mr. Berg and Ms. Beckel had to say, and then this was responding to some technical assistance from the departments along the way as well. So I don't know that that we need to go through anything further unless members have questions.
Sure, member discussion? Seeing none, we'll vote on it. We'll vote on this amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Ayes have it. The A1 is adopted.
And then, I know, Madam Chair, there is an A4 amendment, and it may make sense to address that now if that's something being offered.
Sure. Lead Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm offering the A4. A4 amendment would redirect about $419 million from proposed increases in the CCAP and create start payment scheme to the early learning scholarships. The amendment also makes reforms. It'll increase the household income eligibility to 225% of the federal poverty level to serve more families. It extends the child age range from 0 to 5. Sets a scholarship amount to be the greater of either the current CCAP reimbursement rate or the average statewide general education revenue per pupil, whichever is greater. Prohibits the Commissioner from Education from differentiating scholarship amounts based on the provider type, so the family child care providers are not arbitrarily given a lower level of scholarship. And the amendment when it exclude early learning scholarship programs from the new Great Start scholarship program to prevent early learning scholarships accounts from being a slush fund for the new program administered by the new commissioner and the new department. And that's the gist of the amendment.
Thank you, Lee Daniels. Discussion, Chair Pinto?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Lee Daniels, first, let me just say how much I appreciate, there's a lot to like in what you're proposing in the sense of we need to be investing way more in childcare and early learning. We need to do so with a higher income eligibility. We know that families are struggling at income levels that are higher than currently being supported. We need to increase the amount going, the tying to the amount that would be received when kids start school. That is all wonderful. And I would love to have your support in saying that we have a system and a tax and spending system that supports that. What concerns me about what you're proposing here, though, is that then it would gut support for childcare and early learning in other ways. And we have, one of the things that you would be cutting in this amendment is the Great Start scholarship approach in the long run to say that we need to be pulling together the different streams that we have. Child care assistance program, scholarships, et cetera. And what this is doing in a way is it's sort of leaping ahead of that. I want to note that the CCAP system we receive federal funding for, it's a federal system, and it allows and supports parents to be working, and it has a really incredibly important role. And to leave that system still with the sort of rock bottom payments to my mind, is not serving families well and not supporting the providers who support those families, and actually does hurt family child care providers and all child care providers in their role in supporting families. So I believe that the bill that we have is taking a balanced approach. We are investing several hundred million dollars in scholarships. That's wonderful work, and we're also making sure that we get those rates up in CCAP, and over time saying that our state needs to have an approach to child care and early learning that brings all this together and supports families. So I'm viewing this as a really positive thing, as a statement that we need to be providing support for families much higher in the income eligibility level, and I hope we can work together on both this session and in future years too, to say that we have the spending that's necessary, because we know that there's the need for that, and make sure that that happens. But in the meantime, I would urge the members respectfully vote against the amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Lee Daniels.
My push for this is a couple different reasons. Number one, it gives families the choice of where they want to bring their youngster. The early learning scholarships are well, we're going to change the federal poverty level to 225%, so that will increase the people that qualify. Now, for a family of four, that's going to be about $67,500, and for a family of three, roughly about $66,000. So it'll increase that availability to those folks. The A4 also deletes the 75th percentile, and we talked about that for quite a long time, but that's a huge jump, and what happened is it will end up reimbursing more families on the family scholarships to a higher level so that they can choose, like say, where they want to go, and I think it'll help our family child care providers as well. So that's the reason for the amendment, to put the money into the hands of people that can decide, make their own decisions and where they go, and a little more options.
Madam Chair, can I?
Go ahead, Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Lee Daniels, I'm sorry and all. I should have noted this before. So arguably the amendment is out of order, I should say. I'm not going to ask the chair to rule in that way, but I will note that we have a $300 million target in the education side, an $875 million target on the human services side. The way you've gotten around that, attempting to get around that, is to send the money to the human services side for then transfer to the education side, which I admire the cleverness of that. And again, I think I'm not asking the chair to rule it out of order, but I will note that it's arguably and maybe over the line of being a little bit out of order, because in fact it's taking the human services side dollars that are the Ways and Means Resolution is telling us to spend, and then just getting around it by transferring it. So that's another reason, I guess, to have a little bit of skepticism of this, as to how allowable it would be under our rules. I'm not going to ask the chair to rule out of order, but I would urge a no vote a little bit for that reason as well. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Rep. Patiza Watuin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to clarify for the sake of the public, I know that our system contains many pieces and can be very confusing to the average Minnesotan. But the child care assistance program, like as the chair mentioned, is contributed to by the federal government as well as our state investment. The CCAP payments that go to families are also 100% portable. So sometimes I think in the language that we use, we can make it seem like scholarships are the only one their parents get a choice. But when people are receiving child care assistance payments through the CCAP program, they still have a choice of where to send their children. So it's not a one thing where like the government decides like, oh, if you want to get this money, you have to go here. That does not happen with CCAP. And I think that oftentimes in the language that we use, people get a little bit confused. So I just wanted to clarify that people have that in both programs. And to the chair's point, I mean, some of the money is run through the Health and Human Services budget, some is run through the education budget, and there's space for both in this budget bill. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any more discussion on the A4? Lee Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to close with the early learning scholarships are portable, flexible, and parent-empowered. With the fog of the fraud surrounding CCAP and other DHS programs, I ask for your support, and I do request a roll call.
Roll call being requested.
Chair Pinto?
No.
Chair Pinto, nay. Vice Chair Keeler?
No.
Vice Chair Keeler, nay. Lee Daniels?
Aye.
Lee Daniels, aye. Representative Bliss?
Yes.
Representative Bliss, aye. Representative Coulter?
No.
Representative Coulter, nay. Representative Davis?
Aye.
Representative Davis, aye. Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Hansen, nay. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager?
No.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, nay. Representative Hicks?
No.
Representative Hicks, nay. Representative Hudson?
Yes.
Representative Hudson, A. Representative Katiza Batun?
No.
Representative Katiza Batun, nay. Representative Lee?
No.
Representative Lee, nay. Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Nelson, aye. Representative Perez-Vega?
No.
Representative Perez-Vega, nay. Representative Zalesnikar?
Aye.
Representative Zalesnikar, aye.
With 9 nays and 6 ayes, the nays have it. The amendment is not adopted. Moving to discussion of the bill as amended. Chair Pinto, did you want to say anything, or do you just want us to start with member discussion? And
member discussion is fine, Madam Chair.
Okay,
thank you.
Sounds good. So this will be the opportunity, members, for us to discuss the bill as in its entirety as amended prior to taking the vote. So we'll start with Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, thank you, Chair, for your work on this bill. This is, I think, a really exciting bill, and I'm really excited to be voting for it. I also want to thank our nonpartisan staff. I'm sure I'm not the only one who will do so, but I thought I knew how hard they worked when I was a staffer, and then I became a member and really saw how hard they worked. So I just want to express my sincere appreciation for our nonpartisan staff. The other thing I want to note is most of my time on this bill in the last couple of weeks working on child care licensing issues. And I know, you know, there's some really good language in here, but there's still more work to be done. And I just want to make sure that folks here know that I am committed to continuing that work. So, you know, I think this committee was far and away my first choice when we requested committee assignments. And I think we all value much of the same things, and the reason that I request it is that we all want to focus on supporting and strengthening families, and this bill does that, I think, in a lot of really, really important ways. Some of them are sort of smaller. Representative Hicks, diaper distribution bill, my goodness, parents know how expensive diapers are. But the other piece that I unfortunately wasn't able to highlight when the bill itself was heard is family, friend, and neighbor grants. That's a piece that I worked on a few years ago when I was a staffer. And it's a really unique opportunity to sort of innovate and call on the grassroots energy that there is out there on doing this work. So it does that in small ways and also some really big ways. We talked about our investments in CCAP and the early learning scholarships. That really will make life-changing investments in kids and parents. And that's important because it helps all of us. It helps all of us move forward when families are better able to live their lives. And Chair Pinto has often talked about early care and education being a public good and therefore needing public investment. And I guess my sort of slightly different spin on that would be that we all depend on a strong early care and education system. Whether or not we have kids or grandkids or nieces and nephews, we all depend on it being strong and delivering for Minnesota families. And I think we should all have a stake in it. I think this bill really puts a strong emphasis on that. So I am, again, just really, really excited to be supporting this bill. Thank you again.
Thank you, Rep. Coulter. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. excuse me. I'm not going to spend too much time or really any time, I think, addressing particular provisions in the bill. I just want to speak kind of to the philosophy that I see informing it and perhaps a blind spot that is being overlooked in its development. I mean, this whole process has very much felt like going to the grocery store with without really thinking about how much you intend to spend and then just grabbing whatever looks good and sounds good. When you present these pieces on an individual basis, they all sound very meritorious. Diapers for kids sounds like a good idea. Helping the homeless sounds like a good idea. Ensuring that parents can send their kids to childcare sounds like a good idea. And we just grab off the shelf every item that looks good and sounds good, throw it in the cart. But eventually the moment's going to come where you get to the register and it's all going to be added up and you have to pay for it, which is great if you have the money. It's not so great if you don't. And my concern is not even what's going to happen today or this year or this biennium, but where this all ends up going down the road. Because the feedback that I've been hearing, both in terms of the testimony in this committee and others, and also just in talking to people in the real world, is that our systems are pressured and strained right now as it is. And that seems to be due largely to an inability to deliver on expectations and promises, because there isn't enough money. There just isn't enough. And the only way out of that is to either lower expectations or somehow come up with more money. And that second option seems to be the direction we're going, which is fine if the money is there to tax, to appropriate. The problem is there's no, in spite of what's been said, there is no magic money tree. And people do have choices about where they live. We're not California. We're not surrounded by desert and ocean. It's very easy to move to Wisconsin, to Iowa, to either the Dakotas or Florida or wherever. And businesses and people with means have those options available to them. And so my concern is that this we're on a path fiscally where we're going to end up where there is no way to deliver on the promises that we're making to children and families today. And that would be as bad as some of the stories that we've heard of how difficult it is to keep the balls in the air and raise a family, how difficult that is. A worse story will be people taking a sigh of relief with the expectation that they're going to be provided for. And then we get a few years down the road and we can't deliver on those promises. So I hope that's not how things pan out. Thank you.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Thank you so much, Chair Pinto, for this bill. Thank you so much to our committee members who have all worked really hard on this bill and our nonpartisan staff who have put in obscene amounts of time to get this package in place. This package is an investment, and it is an investment that I believe is going to multiply our kids and families in Minnesota. I know personally how difficult it is for families in Minnesota when they're interacting with the child protection system. This bill does a lot of really good work in that area. The inclusion of the Quality Parenting Initiative, the inclusion of kinship dollars, the introduction of the Beyond 21 bill, which is revolutionary in my opinion, is going to support these families, these kids, their families, and their communities. The resources for families that are experiencing homelessness is going to prevent family separation. The diaper bank is going to prevent neglect calls for diaper rash. The supports in this bill are going to help move families out of poverty and into work. And moving people out of poverty and into work is good for Minnesotans, and it's good for Minnesota. As the department works to separate and create its new division, I am hopeful that they will use this time for reflection and inclusion of all children and families, including those interacting with the child welfare system and those with disabilities. I'm looking forward to hearing from them next session about that work and that collaboration. I believe that this is an opportunity to create a better system and to work together and collaboratively to improve our child welfare system in Minnesota. And I look forward to continuing that work, and I'm excited to support this bill as the first step towards that work.
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. Representative Pinto and Chair Pinto, I've appreciated working on this committee. Childcare is something that, although my kids are raised, is of concern to me because I've cared for people in senior settings that require 24-hour care in settings across Greater Minnesota. My concerns are there's a lot of government mandates, and we also set budgets. And my concern is there is not a lot of meat and potatoes that's going to help Greater Minnesota with family child care. And Greater Minnesota has family child care needs that look a little different than large areas where you have center child care and you have more options. And that does not exist in Greater Minnesota. And I've looked at the list of the daycare providers in the counties in Greater Minnesota, how many centers, how many family child cares, and it's been noted in this committee we had 700 family closures, and there hasn't been a lot that I think we've done for family child care. And that to me is disappointing, and I'm going to keep working for that. You know, my concern is that, you know, good intentions have unintended consequences, and there's a lot of good things in here, but the unintended consequences are what is, we're making assumptions based on this reality that we're going to continue with this $20 billion surplus world we're in right now. And we are spending it, and we are increasing the budget beyond the 24, 25, 26, 27. And so the reality is, when I look at the budget forecast that the state of Minnesota gave out, that doesn't show business growth. It doesn't show a tax base that's growing. It doesn't show people moving to Minnesota. And as a leader, and for businesses in the state, when we strategize and we do strategic plans, we look at what is all of our dreams and our wish list like this. And in order to get there, the first thing you do is build revenue. And we have to create a state of Minnesota that creates revenue to support the wish list. And my concern is that has not been what's happened. And in fact, we're seeing the reverse. And so when I look at this, taking away programs, history shows, is a much deeper wound than giving out the money. This part of this today is actually the easiest thing we're going to do. The hardest thing we're going to do is deal with the effects when it can't support it, and we have to cut. And that's what I have deep concerns with. And that's really what my issue is. The intentions of helping is something I will always support. But there also is the reality of who's going to sustain this. Who will sustain what this is? In rural Minnesota, in Greater Minnesota, and in the metro. And when that doesn't match, my innate sense is we have to hit the pause button because we're out of bounds. And this will affect Minnesotans. And that's my concern with the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Thank you. So as I kind of look at the language and look at the budget and everything, this is truly an investment in our child care. You know,
and I do appreciate kind of like the holistic approach that we've taken. Childcare is not just a place to put your kids while you go to work during the day. It is a place where we need to foster enrichment. We need to foster education. And I think, you know, along with this too, like we're addressing things that help the families be able to go to work. So addressing homelessness, addressing like the diaper stuff, like we're looking, again, it's not just a place to put your kid while you go to work. There's so much more to families and more, and we're appreciating that complexity. I also appreciate that we're like finally recognizing the amount of attention investment and we need for kids from 0 to 3. Like it's just amazing that most of the brain development happens by the time they're 3 years old, and finally like recognizing that and putting some money to help enrich and develop that is important. And then I'll say I really appreciate the DHS investment. You know, we hear a lot about just how the systems don't work, the systems crash, the systems don't talk to each other. They haven't been updated in probably 30 years. So finally recognizing that the people who work at DHS are parents and families too. They want the system to work faster and better and more efficiently, and they have ideas. And, you know, having some investment there will bring us into the 20th century to help make things faster and make more sense and be more efficient and be more effective. So I appreciate that. And then just I want to say the thank yous to our staff. That must have been just crazy the last few weeks, and just really appreciate like your patience and flexibility and just nimbleness, if that's a word. And then Chair and Vice Chair for your leadership and keeping us on task and just having good discussions. I appreciate that. Thank you to the all of our colleagues on both sides for some good discussion. And then just a thank you to the public and the advocates just for raising your voice and making sure that we're hearing you. So thank you.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Chair Pinto. I appreciate your mentorship and your leadership as this is my first session. And this committee means a lot to me. I'm a single mom. I have a soon-to-be four-year-old who's going to enjoy her birthday next week in our break. And it's personal, but it's also reflective of what the state needs in equity and trying to work things that have never been done before. If somebody could turn their phone off, that'd be great. We look at how we want to raise all of our children in this state and what that means when we drop them off to their care, whether we're working or we're trying to find a job, so that we can provide means for our children in the best way so that they can reach their highest potential, not just for the child, but for the entire family. I'm really excited to see what early education looks like for our kids. I was a kid who had to grow up in learning in two different languages, and I don't come from generational wealth. I come from survival. I come from struggle, but also with opportunity to recognize what we have in potential. And I believe that that guidance is what's led me to be amongst all of y'all in this committee who want what's best for our kids. I think we can agree to disagree on so much. I've heard that. It's been reflected today here. But we all can agree that we want what's best for our kids to be able to grow safe and to learn about each other and be peaceful amongst each other and communicate with each other and learn the truth. I know a lot of folks here, especially my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, you don't have any means of knowledge of what the truth in history is. And it's not your fault. It's a systemic issue. But we have to take action and knowing that we have to change things differently. And, you know, Rep. Keeler, I'm really grateful for everything that's been done amongst your leadership when it comes to what it looks like in teaching our children about our culture and the culture of this land and how we're not going to wait for them to get into higher education, how we're going to start that by how they want to learn. I was a kid who learned with music. I'm really happy to see that that's been included in this package because that was my connection to learn literacy and language in a home being raised by my grandmother who didn't speak English and by my parents, who are the first to graduate into higher education and provide me with a dream here to keep fighting for those kids like me. We talk about childcare, talk about healthcare. Kim, I'm the mom that I'm privileged to be able to afford those diapers, but I was alongside so many that are in my community that voted for me to be in the seat that can't, and that are really great parents and just need that extra boost of help and support. They don't need to be separated from their kids. They don't need to be displaced or bullied and anguished by a system. They need assistance. And that's what we're here to do, is to boost that level of assistance. I do want to speak on behalf of a lot of constituents that have been contacting me in regards to what our district looks like with homelessness. I'm really grateful that we're able to bring some sources of how we can help greater Minnesota with their homeless issues, but I also want to address that we're dealing with a lot of homelessness for the past 20 years. This isn't new. This isn't just a pandemic issue. It obviously uplifted the issue extremely, but taking action for what that looks like this continued year and next year, we need help there. So I'm looking forward to how we're moving forward with the Gov and with everybody addressing these concerns of like immediate action, because that's something that I want to voice here, that we need help in the metro area with our homelessness action. And we're there to try to figure out how to balance out with greater Minnesota. But we have a lot of greater Minnesota right here in my backyard, in my district that we're sitting in right now. And everyone deserves an opportunity to get some help. I think that's the conversations that we're having amongst the table. But I'm also very encouraging in believing that, you know, going with this pathway is that it's going to help that. It's going to help patch up. And I don't even want to call it patches. I want to call bridges. I want to call bridges of opportunity so that we don't have a gap in what those disparities have been and the trauma that it brings to our kids. I got a call that, you know, our students are conflicted by the time that they get into kindergarten, that we have an issue with gun violence in our own communities, whether it is in the metro area or in greater Minnesota, because I get those calls on how we can bring cultural competency so that we can not have discrimination, not have this poison of injustices of what discrimination brings. And I believe that what we do here, what we seek, whether we're talking about healthcare, whether we're talking about providing education, whether we're talking about providing housing for those kids and these families, is just a meaningful conversation of addressing the needs right now. So there's hope, and I think that's what we're all here for. That's what we ran for, because we still have hope. We still have hope in addressing the system, and we still have hope in working ways new in the system, and that's what this committee is bringing forth right here. So it has been an honor to serve on this committee, and I'm really grateful, like I said, for the leadership that's been here, and I look forward to, you know, leveling up some things that need a little tweaking. But like I like to say in the Puerto Rican me, we say pa'lante siempre, always moving forward, always. Muchas gracias.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a very hard act to follow my colleague because she's such a great orator. But I do want to just congratulate the chair on putting together a very good bill, despite the restraints she had on the target, and making sure that we really do take care of you know, our littlest Minnesotans. Also want to acknowledge and also echo you know, gratitude for your mentorship and leading a lot of us first years in your committee through you know, what a funding committee looks like, right, from overview at the very beginning and learning about, you know, jurisdiction and like all the things that we have to take care of, and then just going through the process of bills, motions, and now our funding bill. Also want to thank our amazing nonpartisan staff who know everything and do everything for us. We wouldn't be here without you, and so I want to uplift that. Also want to, and I guess leading to some of the provisions that the staff have helped me with, want to just uplift the infrastructure grants for Head Start programs. You know, when we think about infrastructure funding, we usually don't think about you know, some of our early learning places, right? We think about bridges and streets, but You know, infrastructure also means the physical buildings where, you know, we house some of our Lotus Minnesotans. So appreciate that and the flexibility, making sure that, you know, these programs can expand, right? Because they're actually physical restraints on HESR programs when you need rooms for cradles. But just to close, you know, I really do want to acknowledge what an important investment this bill is. This is a very, very small investment, which will pay dividends later that I think we can't probably even imagine. And I just want to uplift certain pieces that I think is really important. I know there are concerns about you know, cutting programs later, but I challenge folks to think about or to realize that, like, here in the legislature, right, we make value judgments all the time. And, you know, we want to make sure that we are good stewards of taxpayer dollars. And so with a very small target in this bill, you know, when we think about it later, there will be cost savings in the systems, right? This when we're targeting children whose parents are incarcerated, right, and making sure that they get good quality childcare, this means that down the road, they are more likely to succeed in school and more likely to come back and be, you know, productive contributing members of society, right? And so want to make sure that folks understand, like, we are very intentionally focused on some of our most vulnerable children to make sure that everyone has a good start in Minnesota. I truly believe this is a very small investment that will pay back dividends and give us cost savings in other parts of the economy. So, you know, maybe we can fund some of those sales tax exemptions on, you know, capital equipment because, you know, the goal is, right, that we do the most of what we can. And so really congratulate the chair for putting together a good bill, and I will vote for it. Despite, of course, some of the other things that my colleague has brought up, because also, I mean, we have a huge task of addressing homelessness in our committee, apparently. So want to keep having conversations about that. But this is a very good bill with what, you know, the chair was given. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Just want to check in to see if anybody on this side of the table wants to add any more comments. Okay, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I mean, a lot of really great things have been said, obviously, and so I don't want to double down on a lot of that, but I just want to emphasize that these are the policies that do make people want to move here. When we talk about relocating, where to raise our families, being a great place to live and work and thrive is absolutely a factor that so many people make, and we're seeing that trending across the nation right now, and I'm really excited for more people to want to make Minnesota home. And obviously, thank you to the staff. I know we've talked a lot about that, but we would really be lost without all of you, so I hope you know that. I don't think the public really realizes how many hours you guys put in. I was getting messages from people at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, and this is just really an admirable commitment to really great work, so thank you for that. You know, a lot of my work here is centered around improving the child welfare system and really making sure that we can both, you know, make sure our kids and families are really well protected. But I was really glad this year to keep having extended conversations about the more ancillary needs that we have in those systems of supporting our staff, our social workers, the people in the court system, and really understanding where do their challenges also impact the kids and families. So I'm excited for that, and I'm really appreciative of the department for coming and having really good conversations with us. I think that we had some really tough conversations, but we've made some really great progress, and so I'm excited about that. And obviously there's a lot more collaboration to continue doing. And I think the last thing I want to say is I want to say thank you to the chair for really investing in families experiencing poverty. As a kid who grew up with a family who really, really struggled to provide for me and my brothers and a teen mom who would not be before you without programs like CCAP and WIC and so many of the other programs that helped me get to where I am today. These are investments that really, really nurture the growth of people like me. So when we look at the future and we think, who are we helping with this? It's people like a lot of folks around this table and in this body. And so I'm excited to see our voices represented, our experiences represented. And I just want to say thank you for hearing us on that. You know, from FAME and to CCAP and so many more things. Like, we just feel so invisible when we live in this world where we don't have enough and we can't eat and we're hungry as little kids. And it's just in a world and an economy that's really not designed to invest in us. So again, thank you. Just as a little girl who needed people like us, I'm really glad to have us. And we have a long way to go to really earnestly reconcile and repair the harms of these systems of the past that have put families in the positions they are today. And so I'm looking forward to that continued investment to continue to give people the hand up that they need so every kid can have a great start. Thanks, Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Keeler.
Representative Katiza Wachu.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for all of your efforts over the years, and thanks to our staff who supports us in doing this work. For a long time in Minnesota, there has been a narrative based on a scarcity mindset, but we don't live in a world of scarcity. In Minnesota, we have the resources that we need to give every child a great start. What we've lacked is the political will to make the investments necessary to support our children, families, child care providers, and early educators. We all benefit from these investments. I've mentioned a couple of times that the return on this investment has shown to be the best possible place for state dollars. These investments impact future public education spending, future public safety needs, and they strengthen our future workforce. We cannot continue to do the same thing that we've always done and expect different results. This budget bill, though not nearly as much of a financial commitment as we had hoped, Mr. Chair, says to grandparents, parents-to-be, and child-free people that this state is a place that cares. And in terms of our population growth, former tax chair and now commissioner of revenue, Paul Marquardt, often spoke about how we lose more young people and young families here in Minnesota than retirees. It's just fact. So we can talk about people leaving because they pay a little bit of tax on their Social Security. We can talk about people leaving for warmer weather. We can talk about people leaving. They come back for health care. They come back to see their families. That's what happens. Making these investments matters. The policies that we are enacting that guarantee bodily autonomy, that allow our LGBTQ plus neighbors to access the health care that they need, that protect and uplift safe and supportive workplaces, and yes, making sure that families can afford high quality early care and learning makes people want to move to Minnesota. We all do better when we all do better together. It's never too late for a great start, and this budget moves us in the right direction. Vote green.
Thank you. I'll go next, since we're going down the line. So just to take us on a journey of, I think, how we got here, because this is, homelessness is deeply a part of this, not apparently a part of this. This was housed under Human Services as a homelessness division in the last 2 years. Since that time, I moved into this work as a Greater Minnesota member in a party that tends to overlook us. And I like this table because we've been able to have those conversations. We've been able to be honest about what Greater Minnesota needs, because when we miss that investment, it does bleed to the city. And you do have our people in your backyard. And the reality is we want them to stay in our backyard. Because we believe that when we stay in our communities around the people that we know and we trust, that's how we get out of surviving, and that's the quicker way to thrive. So throughout this process, though the House eliminated the homelessness or the Preventing Homelessness Division, I and other staff continue to have that conversation in roundtable conversations every other week, and have set many other conversations aside to discuss how we address homelessness from a stool component. We cannot continue to silo our efforts in sheltering border to border Minnesota. It's an element of food insecurity. We've talked about it in my time in the schools. If you don't have food, we're hangry. And we all know what that feels like. We all know our emotions aren't right. We know our frontal lobe gets flipped sooner. We know that behaviors act out, and at the end of the day, some of that stems from just not having a good meal. So in this bill, we're addressing that. We're addressing the fact that we know and understand that addressing homelessness as a whole is a huge lift. But to me, I take a lot of pride in the fact that we're moving forward with the idea and the understanding that shelters save lives. And we are making an historic investment. And I'm sorry if people chose not to show up at the roundtables to deeply understand what this looks like. But we are going to make massive moves and be a state leader in what that can look like. And when we tell our kids across this state that we believe that you deserve food and a house, it tells them that we believe in you. You all know the work that I've done in ICWA. I think that I don't need to go into that, but the fact that this is also the committee, that we look at the investments there and we look at how we grow there. There's no secret in the fact that I have some disappointments in DHS and their oversight and what I believe is neglect in what's happening to our indigenous people in this state. I'll say it again, Minnesota is leading this nation in removal of Native American children 17-1. This bill does not approach what I would like to do in ICWA. It's a start. And it's a start and it's a trusting conversation with the agency that they know where we and the tribal leaders stand and with a commitment to continue to work on that. It's not a perfect bill. There's no way in any political status are we ever going to make a perfect bill. But I do appreciate, Chair Pinto, the ability to serve as your vice chair and being able to be in the rooms and to be a part of these discussions and to continue to fiercely advocate for the things that I and many other advocates really believe are real. I know we've said it and I've said it to staff, but the real heroes of this work are the bipartisan and nonpartisan staff. They spend many hours, they show up in spaces that they don't need to, they give amazing input and suggestions with all of us in mind. Many of them have been here longer than us doing this work. And the committee for showing up in, we always say in the indigenous world, we show up with an open heart and an open mind. We don't show up in a space to create conflict because I do believe we all really care about our next generations and the work we do here will have an impact in all of our communities. I really trust and believe that. Thank you for the work that you've all done. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for everybody who sits in the seats and shows up afterwards to have follow-up conversations to help us to get the data that we need to try to make the best of the decisions and the opportunities that we have. Thank you. With that, we'll move over to Lee Daniels.
Thank you, Chair Keeler. First off, I just want to say thank you and Chair Pinto for you running a good committee, a fair committee. We always get to ask questions and very open, and Chair Pinto in particular, you've been very gracious with things that probably you went over the line maybe a little bit, fuzzy line maybe, and we appreciate that. Staff is amazing. You guys have have been working 70-80 hours per week, and hopefully with this Easter break you'll get a little time to rest up. So thanks to the staff, both partisan, nonpartisan. Thanks to Jody Withers, my right-hand man, who's if I ever played chess with him, I'd never have a chance. He's so many steps ahead of me. It's amazing. So thank you, Jody. Now I have to criticize the bill, and that's tough for me. There are still elements in here that I'm very concerned about, and I'm not really sure where to start. I'm going to start with some of my comments my colleagues have made and just kind of reemphasize some of that. Representative Hudson said basically, you know, at some point we're going to run out of money, and I believe it was was a Tuesday's meeting at CAP 120. One of the testifiers basically said, you know, thanks for the increase in money, but we know it's not going to last, and they know it's going to have to cut programs. That's my fears. We add all this money, and it's great. We have a big surplus 3-4 years down the road that the economy may take some maybe a little bit less, you know, more of a dive. I mean, there's so many indicators that are all over the place for the economy. Bottom line is, in maybe 3 or 4 years, we're going to have to cut those programs, and that's going to hurt. I believe Representative Zensklar, sorry. I'm really tired.
Z.
mentioned about that. You know, it's just not going to be sustainable for more than probably 2 or 3 years. And the ideas are admirable. I think, you know, trying to fix the homeless situation, trying to, you know, fix the daycare issues is an admirable one. But we already have Minnesota is the fourth highest exiting state for people. The IRS study done a handful of years ago, a seven-year study, they measured families leaving the state, and there was $1.7 billion of wealth left the state in a seven-year period. The income tax revenue is in a pretty flat. It's a 0.9% increase from last year. So there's just worry to me. I'm kind of a conservative, I guess. I don't buy more than I can afford. I don't know. I don't spend more than I have. My another concern is closing of the rural smaller family daycare providers. I believe over 700 have been closed in the last year, and my concern is these places will disappear after this bill gets placed into law. So that's a concern I have. I still have a concern on the fraud and abuse of the CCAP program. You know, some of the investigators under testimony said there was possibly $100 million or more. We never did get a figure of how much they found. There's 40 investigations still going on. Now there's a new number for CCAP daycare providers that are tied to the Feeding Our Future scandal. So that puts a little concern in. I noticed there was new language in your bill, Representative Bento, to hopefully, you know, take care of some of that fraud and abuse. Another one I was just going to touch on is the how we're going to fund the programs. Normally we fund it by the children in the program, and through COVID, when everything was shutting down, we want to keep the daycares centers going, so there was a lot of money influx there, and they were paying per employee because they didn't want to lose their employee. And now I see this is going to be put into law, and that concerns me that we're going to be paying for the employees count, not for the children in the daycare. And one of the comments Representative Davis made a few committee meetings ago was it seems like we're maybe trying to push people out of poverty, when if we have the right economic atmosphere, or we have the ability to pull people out of poverty instead of pushing people out of poverty. And I really like the statement that you made, Representative, that there's two ways to achieve the same goal. And but I won't go on and on. I was telling Chair Pinter I've got like three pages of like line items. I did find that grammatical error. That was where was that? Well, I'll get that to you later. I've got it more. But anyway, I love the intent. I think we're trying to do the right thing. I just don't think the way we're doing it is going to be sustainable, and I don't think we should have. I'll just leave it at that. I really enjoyed working with you, Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Keeler. You guys have always been open to everything, and so thank you so much. And we'll take this to the floor.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I pride myself on generally being pretty concise. I think I know I speak on the floor kind of often, but I hope when I stand up, folks know it's not going to take too long. But I'm going to take a tiny bit longer than I would otherwise. So my apologies to folks in advance. A big thank you first to staff, to Sarah and Chris and Ioma, our pages, who've done just amazing work, and grateful for them. To Ms. Colburn. And to for everything. Well, I'm so grateful to Molly Peterson and Jody Withers, our partisan researchers, Zara Khan, committee legislative assistant, and to our nonpartisan staff, to Solve Beckel and Doug Berg, the House Fiscal, and Sarah Sunderman, Daniel Pinelli, and Annie Mock. I think the members have described the work that they do, so I won't get into that, but just know how grateful I am. Members, I came into this work, as I think you know, with a particular focus on getting young kids off to a great start and focus on child care and early learning. And over the course of my work and study and all this, I recognize how much broader that is and how important it is that we come at that issue of getting kids off to a great start from so many different angles. And that's why I was so excited when I started hearing the rumblings of the idea of there being a Department of Children, Youth, and Families. and the opportunity that presents, and then the opportunity of having a committee like this. Members, we can be really proud and excited about the opportunity presented by this bill. And I just want to make sure that we're not missing some of the details on that. We talk about getting people out of poverty and into work and into opportunities, and there's so much here for economic security for families and reforms to MFIP and other aspects related to that, and part of that security is food security. I want to make sure you're noting the investments in food shelf funding and capital projects and making sure that our tribal nations and American Indian community have investments in food security, building on what we've done for universal school meals as well in the separate vote. A lot has been discussed about the investments we're making in homelessness. I'm grateful to Vice Chair Keeler for her leadership on that. These are historic investments. There is more to do, of course, in this area as in others, and we are going so far in making sure that people have the dignity of a place to be and a place to live, and making sure that, that folks experiencing homelessness are put on a path towards having that stable place and support. In the child protection area, providing support after foster care, which is so critical for young people, adolescent services, supporting our tribal nations and the investments in ICWA. Again, more to do in all these areas as well, and yet I'm so proud about that. And circling back to my experience and my background in child care and early learning, following through on our commitment to raise CCAP rates, to invest in CCAP, to expand those families that are eligible for that, family, friend, and neighbor care, as was referenced, early learning scholarships, the compensation support payments that are in here at a much lower level than I'd like. We need to address that and be moving that forward. And I'll just note that our child care workers and the teachers, the educators in that space are paid, I think the average is $11.45 an hour for the most important work that is done in society. And systemic reforms that we're making, many of them, but especially the Great Start Scholarship approach to pull together these different streams, as was referenced in my exchange with Lee Daniels, and a system to support all of this. As Representative Hemmingson-Yeager referenced, we are investing in the administration necessary, both in DHS and actually MDE as well, to support the other work that we're doing. That is not something that has happened through the years. That's not something that has been prioritized in the past, and we need to make sure to do that. And the new agency, as I referenced, of children, youth, and families. It has been brought up, this question of sustainability, of saying, what is the path? What promise are we making? Members, our state has historically followed the path of investing in people. We have had, admittedly, higher tax rates. We've had higher spending. And you know what it has resulted in? It's resulted in one of the best economies in the country, and one of the states that has the best outcomes in terms of health and wellness in the country. I think I forgot if I said this in this committee or another, but the only other state that competes with us in that is Massachusetts, which is, again, a state that has higher taxes and higher spending. That is a vision that has worked. It's a vision that that has stood us in good stead for a long time. The thing that's different for our committee members is that broader vision about investing in people, we have the opportunity to invest in kids, which has the even bigger payoff. We know that that works even better. When we are giving kids opportunities, we know that they have there's incredible payoff. And I guess I would just say, how sustainable is it to not give children a great start? How sustainable is that? It is not sustainable at all. And for some of us who work at the other end of the system and having to deal with the problems that result when you don't invest in kids, that's when the real payoff, that's when the real cost is. That's when the real cost is. And so making an investment now is necessary to have a payoff in the long run. I will point out, it may be that in 2 years, that payoff on the kids that we invest in right now, that's a challenge, and we're going to continue working on that. But the reason that we're having so many challenges in so many areas now is because we didn't make the investment 20 years ago. Let's not make that same mistake, members. Let's not have it be that the next generation asks why we did not make these sorts of investments, why we did not provide shelter for people who are experiencing homelessness, why we did not provide food security and economic security, why we did not invest in our child protection system, why we did not invest in child care and early learning to get every
every kid off to a great start. Why would we not do that, I would ask you. And I would say that that the doing of that, that is the thing that has the payoff. That's the thing that future generations are going to look at us because they will have had that experience and are going to say, thank you for doing that. So there is more to do, and we can be so proud of the work that we're doing here, as I'm proud of it and as grateful as I am to all of you for your work. I would urge your support of this bill and this budget as we continue to move forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. With that, Chair Pinto re-refers House File renews your motion.
Madam Chair, I'm just going to change the motion slightly, which is to re-refer the bill as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means and direct staff to make grammatical, technical, and conforming changes as necessary.
Wonderful. We'll take the roll.
Actually, I guess that was not requested, Madam Chair, so I guess not.
Okay, so all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay.
No.
The ayes have it. We are moving to Ways and Means as amended.
And Madam Chair, I'll just note, members, there may be an informational hearing or two in April. Be on the lookout, but this will be our last regularly scheduled meeting. Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and Lee Daniels and all.
Also noting that we had originally saved the evening tonight if this went on, but we got through the work that we needed to do, so we will not be coming back this evening. Thank you. We are adjourned.